This show furnished by Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervey. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervey. I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And Carrie Kasem is not with me today. My reliable co-host is off doing something else, so we took the opportunity to bring in a new co-host. Carrie who? Yes, we have the voice of reason. Actually, Deb Carson has been called the voice of reason, and Carrie Kasem has not. And I don't think she'll mind me saying that. She enjoys not being the voice of reason. Today, we have the voice of reason. Deb Carson is an award-winning radio and television personality. She's been with Fox Sports Radio for a long time as a national sports anchor. Worked with Dan Patrick Show, Rick Eisen Show, Chris Broussard, Stephen A. Smith Show. And she's also worked on KFI with Bill Handel. That's kind of a legal connection because we're a law show. Bill Handel, of course, was here at KBC doing a law show some time ago. She's worked on America Now with Meghan McCain and American Now with Andy Dean. So she's been around the block in this industry, won so many awards, 2012 Gracie Award for Outstanding Reporter Correspondence. And I'm so proud that I can call Deb my friend. Deb, welcome back to Gervey's Law.
Thank you, Alan. It's a pleasure. I've been here as a guest, of course, as
your
sports correspondent a couple of times. But it's great to be here. Great to be your voice of reason. And since Carrie is not here, I will offer my own real, fresh perspective on things.
And we appreciate that. And you know Carrie. You've worked with Carrie. Where did you know Carrie from? Was it from her previous show with
Nikki, yes.
With Nikki Sixx.
Yeah, Fox Sports Radio is in Sherman Oaks. It's in a building that Premier Radio Networks is based
right.
in. Nikki Sixx show was there. So Carrie was across the hall co-hosting with him for several years. And I was right across the hall from her anchoring the National Sports Reports, co-hosting with Stephen A. Smith. And I've been there for about 13 years now. So I've known Carrie for a long time. And obviously we have a long time connection too. That would be our children.
Yes. Our children went to preschool. Well, actually, it was Mommy and me
when they were about 5 weeks old.
We've known each other for a long time and shared Halloweens together, which has been amazing to be able to go out with Chase and Chris and Nancy Hudson and Harper. We've had a great time. So appreciate that. It's such a small world, you know, when you talk about it. Then Genevieve Wong, the producer of the show, you worked with her in Bakersfield.
She produced the morning news at the station I was at Bakersfield, and I was the traffic reporter and the fill-in anchor when she got there, and then she left, and I left shortly thereafter. But it's crazy what a small world it is,
yeah.
And how you three all ended up working together on this show.
It's amazing when you talk about you working with Carrie and Stephen A. Smith. I don't know how you got a word in edgewise, especially working with Stephen A. Smith. I mean, a very talented guy, but I would say provocative, to say the least.
Absolutely.
What was it like working with Stephen A. Smith?
I loved it because here's the deal. For that year of my life, I woke up at midnight because we were on the air. Nationally, it was the East Coast morning drive time from 6 to 9 Eastern, but that means 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific. So in order
right.
to be prepared on all of the NBA, the top 25 college hoops games, all of the sports news of the day, baseball, I had to wake up at midnight, essentially, to get prepped on all that stuff because generally, I had to be in bed between, 7 and 8 o'clock, and I was still only getting a few hours of sleep. But
Did you say that you loved it? How do you love that?
I loved it because I never knew from a day-to-day basis where he was going to go.
Oh.
I could start the day prepared with all of this stuff, and he'd say, now, Deb, you know, we're going to get to the basketball in just a few minutes, but what do you think about this Arizona immigration law? Like, off, on a complete
really?
tangent. Yeah. And it was great because we did talk about things. We talked about sports, obviously, but we talked about race relations. We talked about issues between the sexes, you know, because obviously we had our differing opinions on that. And it's interesting. I found that we did have some common ground on a lot of things you might not think we would have common ground on.
I wouldn't think there would be many things, but I know that he does talk about law sometimes. This is a legal show, so we like to talk about that. And when you talk about racial relations, and he does his research, but sometimes he says things that I think rub people the wrong way.
Well, and a couple of things have gotten him in trouble.
Yes, they have. Too,
but it was great. I guess my point is, if you're going to have to wake up at midnight to go to work, you better have a job, or might as well be going to a job that keeps you on your toes. And that's kind of my point. That's what I appreciated about it. It was definitely a challenge.
You know, when you talk about working with people like that, and Dan Patrick has been outspoken, a lot of them, Rick Eisen, and they call you the voice of reason. How are you able to deal with some of these, what we typically think of these men, sports nuts? And here you are, a woman, and I know that you know more about sports than most anyone I know, including men.
Well, thank you.
How have you dealt with it all these years as kind of the lone woman sticking up for the women's perspective, but really with a lot of knowledge of sports?
Well, thank you. I appreciate your saying that, by the way. I think it's because I tend to overprepare with everything. I think if you're going to be the first or one of the first in whatever it is, whether you're the first woman, you're the first minority, whatever it is, I think unfortunately you get a lot of the shrapnel that comes along with that. You get a lot of the people going, well, you know, what does she know about this? So I think I feel the pressure of having to know more than I really need to know to be on the air. Because I never want to not have the answer. And by the way, it's okay not to have the answer. None of us know everything, but I definitely feel like I need to be as prepared as my male counterparts because, you know, people are going to use it, not so much with me because I've been on the air now for 13 years with Fox Sports Radio. So I'm presuming everybody knows that I know what I'm talking about. But I never want to be the reason that the next woman doesn't get an opportunity. Like, I love for women to get opportunities doing new things, but I want to always make sure that it's the right woman who gets it. Not just because she's a woman, because a lot of damage can be done if the wrong person has the first opportunity. People will use that as a chance to not give, you know, not open the door to the next person. So, and that goes across the board. It's not just sports.
It's interesting. Well, in sports, Jessica Mendoza, who is really groundbreaking in women's sports broadcast, Major League Baseball, now is working with the Mets, I believe, in the front office.
Right.
Her mother worked at our law firm Rowan Gervey and Wynn, just a quick plug there. And she really, Jessica, same kind of perspective, just going to be so prepared, not going to let the fact that she's a woman, and also she was a star softball player, U.S. Olympian, not going to let that get in the way. And that's how you started when you were at Baylor and you were doing baseball, Southwest Conference baseball, the first woman to broadcast way back when, before you started in with Fox and your professional career. Did you know at that point that this is something that you wanted to do moving forward?
Oh, I would have loved the opportunity to do that. And the man who gave me the opportunity to try out for the team, I mean, I was stunned. He was the one, actually, who suggested that I try out. I just asked, hey, can I be on the crew somehow? Can I do stats? Can I go grab interviews for you to use on the air? You know, not with my voice. He said, well, don't you want to audition? And I said, really? You would let a girl audition? He said, well, I'll let you audition. I'm not going to let you on the air if you stink. But no, if you're as good as the guy. So I was really fortunate to have Frank Fallon. He was the voice of the Baylor Bears back in the day, just a few years ago.
Yeah,
but, just a few. But when I did come out of college, there weren't a lot of opportunities for women. There were a few women nationally. Like, there was a woman named Gail Gardner who was doing Sports Center. There was a woman named Gail Searens who had done the first play-by-play of an NFL game.
Yeah.
But really, The people that I met, and also I should point out that in addition to doing the Baylor baseball, I interned in the sports information department at Baylor. I interned at a local TV station in the sports department. So I really did immerse myself in trying to make that my career right out of school. But there weren't the opportunities, at least in that part of the country, in the smaller markets, for women to advance. The people that I met in Dallas and in Houston, they said, wow, you're great. You know what you're talking about. But you're 21 and you look like you're 18 and you got to go get some experience. So they said, you know, touch base with us in a couple of years once you've had a chance to do that. But the, you know, I'll never forget, there was a news director in Abilene, Texas, who said, you know, well, sugar, we're not quite ready for a female sportscaster in Abilene, Texas.
Wow.
And it was crushing, but at the same time, I had an opportunity to move out here. I ended up working for Wheel of Fortune for several years.
And I think that motivates you, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
When men treat women that way,
yeah,
it makes you want to succeed even more, even though when you worked for Wheel of Fortune, you were a stand-in for Vanna White?
I was, and I did the production schedules and paid production bills. And I loved that opportunity. But I guess my point with the initial story is I want everybody to understand that no doesn't mean no forever. No might mean, okay, not right now.
Right.
But yes, use that as motivation to say, okay, well, when the time comes, if I have a chance to do it, I'm going to prove myself.
And that's what you did,
absolutely.
Really. And you can look back and think it was all that hard work, perseverance. And what I like you say when you say prepared, as a lawyer, that's what I take pride in. When I go try a case in court, I need to prepare. I want to be better prepared than the next person, whether it's male or female. I think, you know, I never look at it as a sex thing, whether it's male or female. You got to prepare. You got to know your stuff. And that's what you do. It doesn't matter what sex you are.
No.
And you've also appeared in TVs and movies. You did some work, kind of dabbled in that, on Desperate Housewives,
yeah,
The Mentalist, Will and Grace, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. I got a chance to do a couple of episodes of Lethal Weapon back in the fall. That was fun. Yeah, I love to see how it's funny that our guest deals in this. I love to see how the cake, you know, comes together.
I like
to see how things work. I like to see how.
I like that transition. The cake, how the cake comes together, and you've teased our first guest, and we're going to talk to him after the break. But I do want to mention, since you brought up the cake, we're going to be talking to Warren Brown, and Warren Brown is a lawyer turned cake maker.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, has he been successful, or I could say, girl, has he been successful. He opened the Cake Love Bakery in March 2002. And from there, he hasn't looked back. And we are going to talk to Warren after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
The Home Depot has very good news for your lawn. It's called Scott's Thicker Lawn, right now from only $19.98 a bag. Thicker Lawn is a 3-in-1 mixture of seed, fertilizer, and soil improver, perfectly formulated for thicker lawns and happier lawn owners. So spread the word for up to a 50% thicker lawn after just one application. Today is the day for doing with Scott's Thicker Lawn from only $19.98 a bag, now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Selection varies by store.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, exposure, cancers, and death. RGW lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervey's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. Listening to a little Wheel of Fortune. Hey, Deb, why are we listening to Wheel of Fortune?
Well, because that was my first opportunity out here. I worked for Wheel for about 4 years when I first moved out here. My father-in-law, by the way, I met my father-in-law and then subsequently met my husband, actually, through Wheel of Fortune.
And did you ever meet Johnny Carson?
Yes, I did. I met Johnny Carson. I had, you know, I grew up watching him like everybody else did,
right, obviously.
And yes, he happened to be the brother of my father-in-law, Dick Carson. And yeah, there were a couple of moments that were a little surreal. I mean, I've gotten to know, you know, I had gotten to know him and his wife, Alex, who is amazing, who is still, we still stay very close with. But yeah, I'll never forget, we were having a family get together at my father-in-law's house, and we were playing tennis.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those weird out-of-body experiences that I looked across and I was like, wow, Johnny Carson's getting ready to serve the tennis ball to
me.
That's so funny. Do I return it? Do I not return it? What do I do? But anyway, that was fun.
So that's nice. So you had these family get-togethers. Yeah. Did you have any really fancy, nice cakes at these get-togethers?
Nice cakes?
Cakes.
We had a wedding cake at my wedding.
Was Johnny Carson at your wedding?
You know what? He wasn't. He wasn't. He and Alex were actually out on a cruise. We had our wedding. We planned it a pretty short notice. But he was not at our wedding.
Okay.
He was not. Pat Sajak was at our wedding. But
really?
Yes, he was.
Wow. That's
And we did have a nice cake, by the way.
You did? Yes. Was Vanna White there?
Vanna was not there.
She wasn't turning the letters.
No.
So the reason I say the cake, obviously, it was a really bad attempt at a segue to our first guest. And I'll tell you, next week we are having Charles Korsmo on the show, and he is a child actor turned lawyer. So he was in Hook. He played Robin Williams' son in Hook, and he also was in the movie Can't Hardly Wait. He played the nerd, and then he ended up going to Yale Law School, MIT undergrad, and he's now a professor of law at Case Western. We are going to talk to Warren Brown, who did the opposite. He started out in law and has then segued into this amazing career as a cake baker. And I say that because it's not just a cake baker. He's been the host of Sugar Rush on Food Network. He's got the bakery Cake Love and all of the cakes that have been around the country. And we're going to talk about cake in a jar, cake love in a jar. There's so many things that he's done throughout his career as a baker. And he started out just where I did. Well, not exactly where I did, but we both went to Brown University, so that's something we have in common. And then he went to GWU, George Washington University Law School, only to become this health care provider lawyer for the Secretary of the Health and Human Services, and then transitions into baking cakes. It's an amazing story, a passion for life, a passion for food. Welcome to Gervey's Law, Warren Brown.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much.
It's great.
I really appreciate that.
It's great to have. And let's just start, first of all, you were at Brown a little bit after me. Have you been back?
Yeah.
I'm on my way back in 2 weeks for reunion
awesome.
Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to a reunion weekend? Is there anything you can tell me about it?
I have been back many times. I love it. I go back every 5 years. And my wife actually went to Brown, too, and she's 5 years younger than me, so we go back on our 5 year reunions, and it works out really well.
Wait a second, Warren. Did you hook up with her because you knew that her reunion year was going to be the same as your reunion year?
It'd be so easy to go back for reunion, yeah. And people must be wondering, like, what's the big deal with reunions? But at Brown, the reunion is like the thing to do, like, the whole school year. And I've been going to campus dance since my first year at school. I hadn't heard of it, but I was friends with some seniors, and they told me about Campus Dance. Like, oh, you got to go, you got to go. And it was, it definitely didn't disappoint. It was always a lot of fun.
And have you taken your family there? Because that's something I'm looking
at. Yeah. No, it's been great. We went back last with the kids. I think it was 6 years ago, because I went back last year for my 30th. We didn't bring the kids that time, which was fun in and of itself. But it's been great going back. My my in-laws used to live in Cranston. They recently moved to Houston, but when they lived in Cranston, we'd bring the kids up to campus and let them run around the green and show them all the different halls and where we went to, where we lived on campus and stuff. So it was always been a lot of fun. I loved going to Brown. It was
me too. You know, and what I'm looking forward to, my kids haven't been there, and we're going to walk in the procession. I have young kids,
nice.
A little younger than yours, and they are looking forward to walking in the procession. It's something that you never forget. Once you do that. So anyway, Deb, we just got off talking about Brown, but I want to talk about your career first as a lawyer, because I read somewhere that you created a study group in law school called Gastronomy and the Law.
Totally, yeah.
What was that about?
That was, you know, it really had intentions of trying to help my classmates just learn how to cook or know how to cook something, anything basic, really. And it was fun. But I'll tell you what happened is that, so my first year, you know how it is, first year of law school, first semester, you're just jammed with classes. You don't know what's going on. And this guy that was in my torts class, that was in my section, you know, we got to know each other pretty well because everyone's always just stressed out. And I think it was like November, before the first set of exams, he lost a tooth. One of his teeth rotted out because he was only eating like either tuna fish or peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or something. But he was basically like really malnourished. And it turned out that he just didn't know how to cook, and he didn't even think of anything to cook. It just kind of got skipped. And so I was just so kind of flabbergasted that was where a lot of people were with their attitudes towards cooking, where it was really just an afterthought. That's like, listen, I know this is kind of a joke, guys, and I know that, you know, people aren't going to take it all that seriously, but let's at least just have some fun in the kitchen to try to introduce you to some basic concepts of cooking things so that you don't lose some teeth. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's where I was going with that. But what it turned into was a couple sessions of me just writing up some recipes, doing some demonstrations. I actually got permission to do it in the faculty lounge at school.
Wow.
It was like, it was the only place where I could kind of do it that it made sense. And I cooked something like chicken verde. Like I took, I remember really well, spinach, lime, and the green part of leeks that were like sliced very thin with some garlic and sea salt, chopped it up, tossed it in a bowl, and then like stuffed it under the skin between the like the chicken skin and the meat, and like roasted that off. And it was just really good. It was a really good, a unique, unusual dish, trying to give them vegetables and greens and all that kind of stuff, but also like some nourishment. That was relatively simple.
Well, I'll just go on record as saying at Baylor, nothing like this was happening anywhere near me. It was more mac and cheese and spaghetti.
Yeah.
And we did have veggies and fruit. But Warren, I would love to know, you know, obviously not everybody can get into Brown and not everybody can get into law school and pass the bar. Mm. At what point did you decide, you know what, I'm going to give all of this up and I'm going to take this leap of faith? Or did it happen that way? How did it evolve?
So I was a couple months into my job as a litigation attorney for the IG, for Health and Human Services. It was my first job out of school, maybe 3-4 months in. And I remember like around 4 or 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, Friday evening, I was asked to do some research. And I thought, okay, well, everyone in the office will be doing research and be working late and it'll be fine. And there was no one else there. It was Friday and people had taken off, gone home. And I guess I should understand that. But at the time I didn't have family. So I was like, whoa, how come people aren't working hard? Like, all my other friends in the private sector are working late into the night, won't I do the same? And it just wasn't an environment where I felt compelled or pushed to work in that way. And I just thought maybe this isn't for me. Like, I just want to, not only do I want to work hard, but I also wanted to create. What I found disappointing about the law was that all I really produced was something that was black letters on white paper, you know, just thrown together in sentences and whatnot. But when I just looked at it, it was just words on paper, couldn't really share with anybody, wasn't colorful, wasn't exciting. No one wanted to know more about it. And I kind of gave into the idea that I think I should follow what's in me to just do something more exciting.
You know, it's now, interesting, Warren, I got to ask you, because you used the word create, and you said, I just got to create. Last year, we did a show with Kristen Wagner, who is the lawyer for the Masterpiece Cake, for Mr. Phillips and the Masterpiece Cake case that went to the Supreme Court. She's with Alliance Defending Freedom on the show. And she was saying, and she argued in front of the Supreme Court, that Mr. Phillips was a creator. When he baked a cake, it was freedom of expression, and he could choose not to bake a cake for a gay couple because it was against his values as a Christian, apparently. Did you ever think, when that case was going on, you're talking about creating, did you ever think of yourself as a baker in that way?
It's interesting because I thought about that case and I thought about that baker, because of course we got asked to bake wedding cakes. And, you know, to tell you the truth, when someone, I don't remember exactly the first time, but I got asked to make a cake for a gay couple, two men that wanted to get married or have a service. And this is way back in 2002. And it was the first time somebody had asked me that. And I got to say that I was surprised. I was shocked. I just was a little bit unprepared for that. It's not that I certainly don't have anything against people who are same sex getting married. But I just had never really thought about that before. And you know, I got to tell you, Alan, like, I think the thing that I learned the most at Brown was whether or not I was prejudicial against people who were gay or lesbian. And it just opening my eyes to that. I mean, I don't know how it was at Brown when you were there, but the gay lesbian community was very active at Brown when I was there.
Right.
And, you know, it was very important for that community to make sure that they knew, or that they let other people know that, you know, silence equaled death to them. And I learned a ton, and my vision opened up much more than I even would have ever anticipated. You know, I mean, I didn't think of myself as closed-minded, but I think that I grew more than I knew I could. So anyways, you know, and taking, I think what I learned at Brown and just taking what I learned as being an open-minded person, you know, I think that a person has a right to express themselves. But when you do say, like, hey, you're going to open up your doors to the public, you got to be prepared for what the public's going to ask for.
Right.
And when you say no, like, there's going to be pushback, whether it's like, you know, you don't want to make a G.I. Joe cake, or you don't want to make a cake for a couple that's getting married. And, you know, we had lots of different instances where I was always surprised at kind of like how the public reacted to the business. And in some respects, it's very benign stuff, but, like, you know, I wanted to make cakes, and I like focusing on the recipes, and I like focusing on making product, but I did not want to run a cafe. I didn't want to run a shop that was, I mean, for lack of a better way to express it, like, all about the community. Like, that's not, I was more and more interested in running almost like a kitchen lab, if you will, you know? Yeah, and because I like creating, I love being into detail with the recipes. I mean, you know, I can still remember How I Made Chicken Verde back in 1995. Like, wow. Who does that?
Well, I can.
And I remember reading something about you, Warren, that you do approach it as a science project. Like, again, yeah. Novice baker here, but, you know, you experimented with, you know, coconut oil versus, like, all the different oils and how they came together and which one worked better in which instance.
And the thing is, you know, people ask me this, and it's this is the way I think of it. And the secure transactions class in law school really gives me the model to follow. And that is because that class I loved, my professor Zubro, Louise Zubro, she used to have this cadence to her chalkboard presentation about the UCC. And she would say, you know, we want to look at, I don't know exactly what the code numbers were, but, you know, what has priority? You know, who has priority in the goods? In a battle between two debtors or two creditors over someone's debt when they're, you know, in bankruptcy, who's got priority over the goods? And that's what the whole, you know, contest is about. So for me, the relationship to that secure transactions class is that I got to look at the ingredients I'm going to use to make a cake or anything. I want to look to see, well, what ingredients got priority out of all these other ones? And then relative to, you know, the first one, what comes next? What comes second? And the priority is a question of texture, final texture of the product. It's going to be an issue of what kind of, you know, how do the oils going to come out if it's a coconut oil versus butter versus palm oil? You know, do we want to have heightened structure? How are we going to get air into this whole recipe?
Wow. You know, Warren, you're blowing me away here. I thought law was complicated, but law is nothing compared to baking a cake. And I want to find out how you take cake love and put it in a jar. I mean, it's amazing how you can do that. We got to take a quick break. We're talking to Warren Brown of Cake Love, and you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. We're talking to Warren Brown, who is a lawyer turned baker, and he was the host of Sugar Rush on the Food Network. He's written books, Cake Love, How to Bake Cakes from Scratch, United Cakes of America, Cake Love in the Morning, and Pie Love. Warren, I got to ask you, because this Cake Love in a Jar is something that so many people get excited about. It's all over the country. Tell us how you came up with Cake Love in a Jar, and is it true that you're not baking the regular cakes now and you're just doing all Cake Love in a Jar?
Yeah, no, it's true. We're just doing them in jars, and it's a great business. I'm happy doing it. I love it. It's challenging. It gives me a different kind of way to express, you know, how I like to bake, basically. So it's cool. The jars were really something I did not expect to get into. So we were in retail bakeries in the Washington, D.C. area, had feedback from people, some positive, but some negative, right? And so for a while, we were kind of like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to deal with the negative feedback. Let's just kind of brush it under the rug, pretend like it doesn't exist, right? You can't do that. You run a business. Got to, like, you know,
right,
find out what's happening. So we had focus groups and just attack the problem and change recipes and wanted to find out if we were, like, you know, kind of getting things right. And people said, and I said to the people who were running the focus groups that didn't want to be there, didn't want to call it a judgment, I said, you know, just give them 5-10 minutes at the end of it and just have an open session. Just let them talk. Just, you know, listen to what they have to say about anything. And the feedback was, I love your cream cheese frosting. That's the thing I want from the bakery. And cupcakes, you know, the recipes are fine, what you've done to them, but, like, they're just too difficult to carry. It's just a pain in the butt. It's stressful. They're messy. Like, cupcakes, is for as great as they are, there's so many things that are bad with them, wrong with them. And I didn't expect to hear that at all. But what I took away from that is, like, well, we just need to find a way to make our product portable, and we should build it around the cream cheese frosting.
So you built the cake around the frosting?
Totally.
Wow.
Because because the thing is, I mean, honestly, like, that's in the bakery setting, when I was running the retail bakeries, like, the frosting is really what drove people to buy the product. That's what they were interested in. You know what I mean? Like, you can have cake without frosting, but it's the frosting that really seals the deal.
Well, for I'm sorry. Yeah. I just have to say, I love the concept just because I know there's guilt. Like, if you're craving cake, you just want a piece of cake or a bite of cake. You don't want the whole, you know, big chunk. You can take a bite of this and get your fix and close it back up. It's brilliant.
That's exactly what people say when they see it, when they taste it, when they're like, I've never thought of this, but I love the idea. And it just does so much for people at so many, for me, for the consumer, for the retailer. It just works. It's just a different way of presenting it. But
and the important thing, Warren, I was going to say is the ingredients, because, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I guess anyone can throw a cake in a jar, but what you're talking about is premium quality ingredients, natural sweeteners, baking from scratch. It's not just a bunch of crap in a jar.
Right. And that's another part of the beauty behind it, because it gives us liberty to make really unusual flavors, like a banana flavor. We have a bananas Foster, and it's just like the recipe is just packed with bananas. I think we use a whole case, 40 pounds worth of bananas unpeeled. But when you peel them, it comes down to 20, and we put them all into a batch that basically made, I don't know how many cases it makes, but it makes a whole bunch.
Wow.
And like, we're using the fresh banana, and we use freshly grated nutmeg in there. And rum, and it just comes together in a really good way. That's the banana cupcake that we used to make at the bakery, but we just changed the format.
And from what I understand, the rule is if you just take a bite, there are no calories, right? Wink, wink.
That's right.
I'm kidding.
You know, it's just invisible stuff.
And it tastes good.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like it really gives me a chance to play and have fun. And I know this sounds silly, I say this, and people kind of just don't seem to understand, but one of the reasons why I love the cake jar so much is just the colors. Like, we have different colors with the flavor bars on them, and the designing it, like, that was another challenge that I didn't do, and I didn't have the opportunity to do when I was in the retail bakery. So it's really a great creative outlet for me, and that kind of gets back to why I got into this, is because I wanted to make something and share, and I really like doing stuff that's three-dimensional,
you know,
and color.
Warren, Deb and I are looking at each other. We both met a long time ago. We have little kids, 6-year-olds, and I also have a 5-year-old. And I'm just thinking, this is just perfect for kids. First of all, I love the imagery that you've created with looking at the jar and seeing the beauty of the cake in the jar. And then when you talk about a kid being able to take a spoon, take a couple bites, because I don't want my kids having too much of the sweets and then putting it back. And, you know, we can use it for a week or, you know, whatever.
You do, yeah. And the thing, and some people laugh and say, like, oh, I'm going to polish this off in a second. You know, it packs a punch. It's cream cheese frosting. Like, you know, it's no joke. And you can finish it off in one sitting, but typically, like, the next one, you'll give it a couple. And that's what people want. They just want a little taste, a little sweet. And I totally get that, because I can't go, like, you know, housing on Cake Love jars. Like, they start showing up on my midline.
Tell us what Spark Bites are. That's something new.
It is. And so whereas Cake Love jars are total indulgence, the Spark Bites are, it's not indulgence, very healthy. It's like it's kind of like a granola snack in a way. And what's going on there is that I needed something that I could snack on, have, that I could eat all day long or any time of day and not feel bad about it. And I mean, I love eating. I love to kind of have different types of food. But I really, you know, like, my nature isn't sweets. Like, I don't have a sweet tooth by nature. I grew up loving having apple pie. The reason why I kind of fell in love with cakes when I had this New Year's resolution back in 1999 to get into baking, so like to kind of get away from just not feeling creative as a lawyer, I got into cakes because it really filled this, this feeling that I had when I was making models as a little boy, as a teenage boy, basically.
Yeah.
And when you're making, I made military miniatures of tanks and soldiers and stuff. And it's meticulous work. It's hours alone. You're painting things, you're gluing things, you're making dioramas, and you're building this image of your head, but you're really just working on one little piece at a time. And that's just like making a cake when you're slicing it and then syruping it and then putting the frosting down to assemble it. It's the same kind of meticulous work. And that's, I think, what I really fell in love with when I was assembling cakes and making cakes. It just happened to be a cake versus like a lasagna or whatever.
You know,
and cake is a really good product.
I'm just listening and I'm saying the passion that you have, and, you know, I'm thinking of my job and I'm ready to quit being a lawyer right now just listening to you because I want to gain this passion. When you look back on this, is it the best move you ever made?
Yeah. No, it is. What it gave me is a means to express myself and I really think kind of find my potential, you know, and really tap into it. And what I've been really surprised by is like how much it's meant to other people. You know, I mean, I didn't do this as a move to try to inspire other people, but it has.
Wow.
And
that's just,
and I mean, that's great. That's cool. Very touching.
It's cool that you can do that. They're almost unintended consequences. We have unintended consequences in the law, but these are real nice ones. Where can people get the cake glove jars and the spark bites? And because people, I'm just getting calls right now.
Yeah.
People want to know how to get these things.
No, totally. So the cake glove jars you get from our website because it's not nationally distributed. Cakeglove.com. You can order different configurations off of our website. We'll mail ship it out. Our spark bites are, it's a new product that we're going to have on our website at sparkbites.net like in May and available for us to ship. It's so new that we're just getting our packaging in. That's our really creative, new, fun packaging that kind of shows exactly what it's all about. Again, something I'm really excited about. The spark bites, I got to tell you, though, like, you know, it's an energy snack. And it's energy because it's nutrient dense. Some of them are caffeinated, but it's also really focused on your gut health. And in your gut health, what it really is doing is making sure that everything's working well. And like, that's not easy to do. And this product is one that I have found to be just something that really kind of maintains balance and lots of prebiotics in it. So I've been so kind of intrigued by how much it's meant for me. Yeah, I really am.
For a lot of us who are a little older and ready for that. You know, it's cakeglove.com. Warren Brown, we want to thank you for being with us today on Gervie's Law. I wish you were in my reunion year, so when I go to Brown next month, I'd be able to share a cake glove jar with you. But
No, that would be something. But we'll have to make sure that you get some so that you can enjoy it.
I would love that. We really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, and good luck with the new Spark Bites product and everything else.
Thank you, Deb. Thank you, Al.
Take care. All right, we've got to take a quick break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, and we're back. It's Alan Gervian. I'm here with my guest co-host today, Deb Carson. It's been great having you, Deb. And, you know, when we listened to Warren Brown, we heard a lot of passion. And he said that when he was making the cakes and people really loved the cakes, that he didn't realize the impact that he had on people, making people happy. You've been so involved with charities and helping other people throughout your career. It's really impressive, and I take my hat off to you. You worked with the Boys and Girls Club of America and PS I Love You Foundation. And over the last few years, you have become very passionate about advocating for the fight of awareness for pancreatic cancer. And I know that all happened as a result of your father's diagnosis, which was in 2015. Very unfortunate. And I met him. Wonderful, wonderful man. I didn't have a chance to spend as much time with him as I would have liked. But I know the relationship that you had with him, such a special person. And now you're giving back.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I think a lot of people, unfortunately, don't know a lot about pancreatic cancer until it affects their family. Because generally, once somebody is diagnosed, the timeline that they have to advocate for themselves, they are spending fighting for their own lives. So, unfortunately, I feel anyway that it is my job as his advocate to speak out, to let other families know what can happen, to try to raise awareness and raise dollars for research. Because as of now, the survival rate, essentially, it's a single-digit survival rate. It's gone up a little bit lately. When I first found out about pancreatic cancer, it was about a 7% five-year survival rate, meaning that if you're diagnosed right now, there's only about a 7% chance that you're going to be alive 5 years from now. It's up to more in the 8% category now, but they're just trying to find, the main thing is trying to find an early detection method.
Right.
Because of where your pancreas is located, you don't have any symptoms generally until you're already stage 3 or stage 4, and obviously at that point it's generally metastasized to other organs or throughout your body. So my hope is that through the Hirschberg Foundation, that's our chosen foundation, and obviously any cancer support foundation
right.
is important.
Hirschberg Foundation is specifically for pancreatic cancer research.
Specifically, yeah. And it's pancreatic.org, basically.
Pancreatic.org, okay.
Uh-huh. But Hirschberg Foundation for Pancreatic Cancer has two key events that I'm very involved in every year. The Tour de Pier is coming up May 19th, and that's where a lot of folks gather at the Manhattan Beach Pier. They set up hundreds of spin cycles, and it's a five-hour spin fest. You know, I only do 1 hour. Everybody does one-hour shifts. But it's to raise awareness and raise money and to mourn those we've lost and to celebrate those who are fighting right now. There's also, in the fall, generally around Halloween, it's the LA Cancer Challenge that raises money also. But pancreatic cancer awareness, you know, needs your help, needs your dollars, and obviously my prayers are with everybody. I know Alex Trebek obviously came out, and unfortunately for him, but fortunately for a lot of people, his diagnosis is probably going to raise a lot of awareness because he is a celebrity, so people are going to start investigating.
So much courage.
He's amazing.
You know, when he made that speech, I think everyone listened, and the way that he was able to communicate after this horrible, horrible diagnosis, and you've done so much, and it's November, which is pancreatic awareness month.
Yes.
And I remember you wore purple for 30 days every day. In fact, I was able to provide my Minnesota Vikings jersey for your daughter Chase as she was in one of the pictures. Such amazing awareness. Just things like that, wearing purple in the month of November.
Thank you. Yeah, because I figure whatever sticks in somebody's mind, if they remember, they'll be like, oh yeah. And if something happens, somebody in their family is diagnosed, they can reach out to me or to somebody else who's been affected. But the most important thing is they need your dollars. They need your advocacy if you have been affected. So, yes, November is Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Month.
And they can reach out to you?
Absolutely. DebCarson.com is my website. Or on Twitter, I'm at Deb Carson. On Instagram, I'm at Official Deb Carson. But absolutely, if there's any way that I can help connect somebody with the proper resources to answer questions, because when you're hit with this, it's mind-blowing, and you're like, what do I even do at this point?
Well, before we let you go, because we've only got a couple minutes, I just got to get a prediction from you. Deb is a huge Dallas Cowboys fan. I'm a huge Minnesota Vikings fan. Who is going to finish above the other in the NFL next season?
I'm actually going to go out on a limb because normally I would say the Vikings, but I think Dallas is going to do well this year. I know they're working on a deal for Dak. And again, I'm not saying he's the next Joe Montana or Tom Brady or anything, but he is serviceable. If they can keep the guys on defense off of probation for various violations.
Exactly. They won't have to pay him as much as Russell Wilson got this past week.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, no, the Cowboys are on the upswing. I think the Vikings have had some problems, but we'll see. We'll have a gentle person's bet.
Yes.
I'm going with the Vikings. You go with the Cowboys. Deb Carson, I'm so happy you were able to come and sit in for Carrie today.
It's been my pleasure.
It's been really fun, and we appreciate it. All the best with Fox Sports and with all of your projects in the future. And we'd love to have you back anytime.
Absolutely, anytime. Thank you, Alan.
Well, that's going to do it this week. We appreciate you listening, and we will be back right here on Gervie's Law next week, same time, same channel. See you then.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.